But I know you movie buffs will, so.
Yes, it's going to be a good time. And if you're wondering what we're talking about, where have you been? Robin Rylett is leaving Northwest Public Radio. She's headed to Portland, Maine. And you could learn more about that on our website and also on our Facebook page. For those of you who do know, you can go to our Facebook page and leave comments for Robin that we'll talk, we'll let her know about on air, and we'll also print those out for her later. The program starts at 9 this morning.
NPR's business news starts with growth for News Corp. The media company controlled by Rupert Murdoch reported profits that beat forecasts. Its stock price climbed yesterday in late trading after the report was released. News Corp posted gains in its digital real estate and book publishing services. Still, the company, which publishes the Wall Street Journal, was hampered by declining advertising revenues in its newspaper business.
And let's hear now from a CEO who says Obamacare forced his hand when it comes to employee benefits. Tim Armstrong, the CEO of tech giant AOL, says the company had to change the way it matches the deposits employees make to their retirement accounts. NPR's Richard Gonzalez has more.
Armstrong told CNBC that company costs due to Obamacare left him with a tough decision.
Do we pass the $7.1 million of Obamacare cost to our employees, or do we try to eat as much of that as possible and cut other benefits?
Beginning next year, AOL will stop depositing matching funds into its employees' 401k plans every pay period. Instead, the company will make one annual lump sum deposit at the beginning of each year. AOL matches up to 3% of an employee's annual salary. The move penalizes employees who stop working at AOL before they receive their annual matching deposit. They could lose thousands of dollars they might otherwise have earned. The move also scales back one key advantage of 401ks, what's known as dollar cost averaging. That means employees, as investors, lose the ability to buy stocks and bonds at regular intervals, thus reducing their risk. The benefits change also comes as AOL announced that its fourth quarter revenues were up 13% from a year earlier. Richard Gonzalez, NPR News, San Francisco.
As the post office continues to lose money each year, a new report recommends one way it can add to its bottom line by offering financial products, such as a check cashing card that would allow customers to make purchases and pay bills online. The idea is to provide banking services that are not available in many communities, but there's also a lot of skepticism. NPR's Brian Naylor reports.
More than a quarter of all Americans, some 68 million, are now underserved by banks. Underbanked, as the report from the Inspector General of the U.S. Postal Service calls them. They live in places where there are no bank branches or just one. Many have to rely on check cashing outlets and payday loans, which often charge exorbitant fees. Betsy Cavendish, president of the Appleseed Network, says being able to go to the post office for simple financial transactions would be an ideal solution.
Many people are spending $2,500 a year or so in extra fees. They have a lack of options for small dollar loans and too few savings vehicles. Meanwhile, the Postal Service is in every zip code in the country and could potentially offer needed financial services.
The so-called underbanked are mostly low income. Many live in cities, but plenty are in rural areas. And while banks have been closing branches, of the nation's 35,000 post offices, more than half are in zip codes with one or no banks. Saying I'm going out to the post office to cash a check or make a deposit may sound strange to our ears, but for our grandparents or great-grandparents, it wasn't at all unusual. Post office banking was even a campaign issue in 1908 and might have helped Republican William Howard Taft win the White House.
It will be a great incentive for thrift. In the many small places in the country, having now no savings bank facilities, which are reached for the post office.
In 1910, Congress established the Postal Savings System. It was aimed at getting people to take their money out from under their mattresses and give those who didn't trust banks another option. Phil Rubio, a historian at North Carolina A&T, says for a while it was quite successful.
By the year of the Wall Street crash, 1929, they had $153 million on deposit. Postal savings banks were considered safe during the 30s when commercial banks were crashing, and 1947 is when they had their peak, $3.4 billion.
But after the war, banks raised their interest rates, making the 2% the post office was paying for savings less appealing. And by 1967, the postal savings system was out of business. Is it time to try again? The Inspector General's report estimates the Postal Service could make almost $9 billion a year in new revenue by offering banking services. For an agency that lost $5 billion last year, that's a tempting prospect. But the banking industry is dead set against the Post Office getting into their business. Richard Hunt is CEO of the Consumer Bankers Association.
That is a typical Washington, D.C. mentality, is you've got an agency of the government losing money. So what do they say? Well, maybe we should go to a field that we know nothing about because there's possibly money there. That would be like my flying a 747 because I slept at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
It's unclear whether the Postal Service would need approval from Congress or could simply decide to offer financial services on its own. It does now sell money orders and could argue providing other financial services, such as a reloadable prepaid card, would simply be an extension of its current offerings. But the Postal Service itself has yet to embrace the idea, saying only it's reviewing the report. Brian Naylor, NPR News, Washington.
And our last word in business this morning is social currency. At one point, Facebook was valued at $100 billion.
And let's not forget that Instagram was bought for $1 billion.
And that by some accounts, Twitter is worth, well, it was worth over $18 billion.
Well, now those socializing can get a bit of the profit pie. At Marc Jacobs' new pop-up shop in Manhattan, no cash is necessary. Social media is the capital.
In exchange for Facebook posts, tweets, and Instagram photos, customers can get goodies from Marc Jacobs, like necklaces and perfumes and purses. The shop is only open this weekend. That's to coincide with the start of New York Fashion Week.
And I guess we'll have to see how long this idea of social currency remains in fashion. That is the business news on Morning Edition from NPR News. Our theme music was written by BJ Litterman. It was arranged by Jim Pugh. I'm David Green.
And I'm Renee Montaigne.
Support for NPR comes from NPR member stations and from the Robert Sterling Clark Foundation to sustain NPR's coverage of Latin American cultural programming on Alt Latino. From the Public Welfare Foundation, supporting coverage of workers' issues. More information at publicwelfare.org. From the Pew Charitable Trusts, driven by the power of knowledge to solve today's most challenging problems at pewtrusts.org. And from Joyce V. Hale, in the interest of engaging an informed and civil electorate. This is NPR.
Earlier in the week, there was predictions for a warming trend for the weekend and some snow, and that looks like it'll happen. A couple of inches likely today, another 2 inches tonight, and also for the weekend. Today, a high in Pullman of 18, Lewiston 26, tonight's lows pretty much the same. Weekend highs, mid-20s to 30 degrees.
Northwest Public Radio, KRFA 91.7 Moscow, KNWV 90.5 Clarkston, and KNWO 90.1 Cottonwood. Also on translators, K274BK 102.7 Kamiakuski, K265DX 100.9 Enterprise, Oregon, and K272DL 102.3 Orofino.
The Bournemouth Sinfonietta, led by Kenneth Montgomery and Percy Aldridge Granger's Handel in the Strand. The original title of that was Clog Dance, and then Granger's friend, who was a banker and an arts patron, William Rathbone, said it made him think of jovial old Handel striding down the Strand, and I think that's a great picture. Percy Granger did add that you can perform this with or without clog dancing, and apparently we chose the without clog dancing option this morning. I'm Robin Rylett. Great to be with you on my last day here with Northwest Public Radio. Can't believe it's happening. And one of the things that's really special about today is that I am joined by my former partner in First Friday Classical Music Crime, none other than Jillian Coldsnow. Hi, Jillian.
Hi, Robin. Thank you for letting me join you on this very special, sad, but also joyous occasion in many ways. You didn't plan it, but this is the first Friday of the month.
It is.
So
it brings
so
back
fitting,
some memories.
Fitting that we
yes,
can spend
is.
This morning together. We have a greeting from a former colleague of ours, Karen Olstead. And Karen, who is now in Ohio, says lots of good memories of the both of us together, Robin, on First Friday's pledge and in person at meetings, social gatherings, and great hallway conversations. Hard to imagine Northwest Public Radio without Robin Rylett, says Karen.
Mm, thanks, Karen. And, you know, it's fun to be able to stay in touch through social media with a lot of former colleagues as we all kind of travel and go to separate places. And so it's nice to hear from you, Karen. And I also want to mention that on First Friday, Jillian and I always had a lot of fun.
We should probably say for those who were listening after 2001, they might not know what First Friday was.
Yes, it was a show that we put together. It was a listener request show, and it was all day from 9 to 4. And Jillian and I would take your requests. This was before email, by the way, really got up and going. So you would send us written requests or telephone in your requests. And all day long, we would play your requests, tell the stories behind those, and we would give away prizes. We even had First Friday t-shirts and CDs. And I still, every once in a while, when I'm out and about, somebody will come up to me at an event with a First Friday t-shirt on and ask about it.
You know, actually Wednesday evening, which was your farewell reception in Moscow, a few people said to me, I miss First Friday. So we certainly had tons of fun, didn't we, Robin?
We really did.
One of the things I remember was that we took our show live with the Yakima Symphony.
We did.
In 1995, the Yakima Symphony's then music director, Brooke Creswell, approached you and said, we'd like to do a live edition of the show with you. And that was fantastic. We were at the Capitol Theater, and they played requests from some of their subscribers. We taped it, and it became part of the show.
And it was so much fun to do. And one of the things I remember, too, is all of the Jillian is a very witty woman. And one time we were playing something by Hector Berlioz, and you started going off on his hair, and we started pulling out liner notes with pictures of Hector Berlioz's hair, which was kind of out of control. And that's a nice way of putting it.
Well, actually, Robin, just to tickle those memories for you, we've posted some of Hector Berlioz's hairstyles over the decades on our Facebook page. And I know all I had to do sometimes was bring a record with Hector Berlioz on it, put it in front of you, and that would just send you.
You'll have to check out those pictures. You'll understand why it's so funny. Handsome guy, good head of hair, but could have used a
stylist. Too much of it.
Yeah. Used a stylist. Well, speaking of Hector Berlioz, we have a little bit of his music for you this morning. Sir John Barbirolli with the Hala Orchestra and the Roman Carnival Overture.
Thank you.
I'm Robin Rylette in the studio with Jillian Coltsnow, who is really slightly evil because she keeps holding up her iPhone with our Facebook post of the hair of the pictures of Hector Berlioz with his crazy wild hair, which is actually lovely. I'm envious of his hair. And speaking of Hector Berlioz, that was his Roman Carnival Overture, Sir John Barbaroli with the Halle Orchestra. And now Jesse Jacobs, who's running the board, is getting into the act and forcing me to look at these hysterical pictures.
You see, the thing is, when Robin sees Hector's hair, she can't help it. She just collapses in fits of giggles. It's good to know that after 20 years, he still has that effect on you. Here you go.
All right. So we're here to have fun today with you. It's something that I have been doing with you weekday mornings for 23 years. I really, truly have had a lot of fun sitting in this studio and sharing music with you. And one of the things that Jillian and I were just talking about as we were listening to the Hector Berlioz is when we did the live version of First Friday in Yakima with the Yakima Symphony Orchestra and then conductor Brooke Cresswell, we heard later from a couple who had met at that concert and later got married.
Yes.
And they stayed in touch with us over the years. And I know eventually, and I can't remember the details, but we played some music for them. And we played what I think we played something that they played at their wedding. And it was just really fun.
It was wonderful. And I wish I could remember their names. But my memory is not what it was 20 years ago.
No, mine is not either.
So if you are the couple in question, you happen to be listening, give us a call. 800-842-8991. If you have any comments you want to share with Robin, you can post them on our Facebook page and see those pictures of Hector Berlioz. Or you can send them by email, nwpr@wsu.edu.
Or send a picture of yourself if you happen to have as fine a head of hair as Hector Berlioz. Love to see it. Before we move on from Yakima, where you're listening on 90.3, I would like to just mention that your present conductor, Lawrence Golan, sent me a lovely email. I haven't had a chance to respond to all of the emails yet, but I will get to it. And Lawrence lived in Portland, Maine for 11 years and was part of the music scene there and goes back every year to conduct something over December. So I just thought that was such a cool Maine connection.
That
you
really
know,
is
between
wonderful.
Maine and Yakima, one of the many wonderful stations that Northwest Public Radio provides classical music for.
Robin, I'm really honored to be here with you this morning on your last shift, but we're also joined by thousands of listeners who are really feeling a little bereft that this is going to be the last morning they'll hear you on Northwest Public Radio. Tom Richtmeyer said, "Goodbye and God bless you, Robin, for all your many days of filling my mornings with beautiful music and great comments. I am 70 years old and have been listening to public radio since I was 7. In all these years," and that makes it 63, right, Robin? "Including performance today, your show was the best. I wish you weren't leaving, but I send my best wishes." And thank you, Tom Richtmeyer, for that lovely comment.
Thank you.
We have a special guest joining us right now, Robin.
Hi, I'm Suzanne Bona, host of Sunday Baroque, and Shakespeare was right. Parting is such sweet sorrow, and parting from someone near and dear is especially hard, even when you know they're moving on to something new and exciting. I'm talking about Robin Rylette, 23 years on this station. What an amazing accomplishment. So much wonderful music she's shared and so many good friends she's made, including a lot of people who've never even had the pleasure to meet her in person. And now she's leaving. Good luck, Robin. Thanks for being a champion of classical music. Thanks for being a voice for the arts in this community. Thanks for helping so many people fall in love with classical music and form a lifelong bond with it. We'll miss you.
This is going to be a long 3 hours for me. Thanks for the hanky. And thank you so much for that lovely, lovely letter. And that was from Tom.
Tom,
thank you. I hope I can call you by your first name, Tom. But thank you so much for that lovely letter. That's very touching to me.
Well, Robin, what music would you like us to hear next?
Well, this is one of those pieces that I just love so much. In fact, it doesn't really matter what this group plays. If you've listened to me, even for a year, you will have heard a lot of a group called I Solisti, a chamber music group out of Europe. And I just think not only their performances, but their arrangements of music are just so much fun. And this is one that over the years, every time I've played this, I always get phone calls and emails. It's the music of Nino Rota, music from the films of Federico Fellini. I Salonisti in Nino Rota's music from the films of Federico Fellini. Hope that brought a smile to your face. It's such a fun piece of music. I'm Robin Rylette in the studio with Jillian Coltsnow, and Jesse Jacobs is running the board for us today. Great having you two here with me on my last day at NWPR.
Robin, you came here in December of 1989. We've been saying 23 years, but really, if we're counting calendar years, you've been here 25, haven't you? 89 to 2014, isn't that 25? Or
what?
Is my math... Oh, sorry.
I think I'm in the beginning of my 24th year.
I see. Okay.
There you go.
So, you know, Northwest Public Radio, and I've been here for 20 of those years, we've seen so... Many
we have.
Changes. Remember all those big reel-to-reels we had to carry around, and now we're digital. Tell us what it was like, how you came to be here at Northwest Public Radio.
Well, I was working at OPB. I was doing an internship there in college, and then I just stayed on when I graduated and was doing some contract work for them and was working full-time in another location looking for a job in radio. And this, I saw this ad in the Oregonian when people still got jobs through looking at the newspaper, and applied for it and got the call to come up and came up, and it just felt right. It just felt like a right fit for me. But I always remember when I came here, I had produced some shows and some interviews for OPB, but I'd never done anything on the air live. And then I came here and I was on the air live 7 hours a day. It was literally like being thrown in the deep end with no water wings, but I had to learn really, really fast. We had three stations at the time, KRFA, KFAE, and KWSU, and now we have 19 radio stations.
I remember when we had our first station on the west side, KZAZ, in 1996, and we couldn't believe how far our reach had gone, and that was nothing compared to where it is now.
I know, it's incredible. I mean, we are a network, and I can still say we for a few more hours. We are a network that encompasses three states, and into southern British Columbia. So we cross state lines and country lines here at Northwest Public Radio. So, you know, it's been really a fun place to work, and Jillian has been here almost as long as I have. As she said, we have lots of really fun stories, and there's one that Jillian wanted me to share with you, and it's we used to have in the studios, this really old carpet. We did a remodel. I can't remember when it was, but it's been a few years ago now. And there was a rip in the carpet. And one time I was approaching the console to start a piece of music. And I had my headphones on, and we had a long cord, and I had gone to the end of the console to get something. And when I came back, my foot caught in the rip of the carpet. And as I fell, I managed to hit the play button on the CD. To start the CD.
It was like an action movie. She falls but manages to start the CD on time anyway.
I kind of felt like Matt Damon, you know, in the Bourne Identity. You know, I just like, woo, action shot. We have all sorts of fun memories of Northwest Public Radio.
We certainly do. And some old friends who were here when you got here are joining us now.
Robin Rylette. Here are a couple of old friends of yours.
You know, one of which feels like Rip Van Winkle right now, because I think it's been about that long since. Well, you knew us before we were a compound noun.
Yes,
you know,
you did.
Really did. You know, back when it was Bob and Bill. Now it's Bob and Bill.
And Robin, I do want to take this opportunity to acknowledge that when I first met you, I was pretty much terrorizing the staff by kicking garbage cans in my frustration, trying to be something in the high-powered world of classical music radio. And I want you to know that I appreciate that you have stayed my friend all these years as I have mellowed and become a grandfather and realized that classical music radio really doesn't matter all that. Wait a minute. I guess I'm giving too much away.
Well, actually, you are in very good company, Robin, because when I first met Bill, he was also kicking garbage cans down the thing. So, you know, we heard clang, bang, slam, which was his door closing. First of all, I did want to let you know, congratulations on the new position. We think that's really great. And you'll also be very happy to know that I have already done the legwork for you online. I have double-checked, and mangoes do indeed go with lobster. You'll find several wonderful recipes for mango lobster salad. All you have to do is go online. Remember, Google is the new Bob.
Bob Christensen is always useful, Robin. I'm not so much. I'm just thinking, you know, all these years I've been trying to conspire how to get out of the Midwest back west, and you're going completely the opposite direction. What does this mean? What does this mean?
Well, you know, anything is possible. Just takes long enough. That's all. That's why I had the Rip Van Winkle quote.
Robin, it's been wonderful to talk with you occasionally all this time, and that you have been the mainstay on Northwest Public Radio as far as classical music goes for a long, long time. And it's a radio station that still is very important to me. And I appreciate you for what you've done for that sound and for your listeners. And best of luck. Congratulations. Hope it works out great. And we'll be in touch.
And enjoy the seafood.
Wow. I mean, I just talked with Bill like last week.
And that's Bill Morlock and Bob Christensen, yeah, who were the music hosts here when you arrived, and they really helped you into...
I have to say that I don't think I could have had two better mentors for starting off as a classical music host than Bob and Bill. So, thanks.
Well, let's move on to our next piece of music. And, you know, Robin, one thing that you've always done is paid attention to what was going on around us and picked music in keeping with the times. And such is the case now, is it not?
Yes, I think it is. In fact, it's winter and it's very snowy and it's been cold. We've had sort of our Arctic freeze. I know it's not been as bad as the Midwest and back east, but things got pretty cold here over the last several days. So I thought it was about time to hear Vivaldi's Winter from the Four Seasons. But one of the other things I've really liked to do is try to find some of the old chestnuts and somebody who's breathed a little bit of a new life into him, which I think Eddie Daniels does in this version. Thank you.